Manchester-Boston Regional Airport has got Spirit. Spirit Airlines, that is. Spirit's sleek yellow jets will be swooping into MHT this fall, bringing with them incredibly low fares. Starting October 7th, you'll fly nonstop to Fort Lauderdale and Orlando, adding Fort Myers and Tampa in November, at affordable airfares based on the options that you choose. MHT is the easy access, no-hassle airport that makes flying simple. Want low fares? We've got Spirit. How about you? Manchester-Boston Regional Airport. Let's jet. Book now on spirit.com.
Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shortliff. This show is heard on WBCQ, the planet, every Monday and Thursday evenings at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also pick it up on our Podomatic page, podomatic.com. Just put in Camp Constitution, and you'll have a good portion, most of, if not all of, our shows. You may not have heard my voice for about a month or so because in late July, my wife and I came down with a nasty case of COVID-1984, the communist Chinese virus, and I got this lingering cough. We survived, lost a little weight. I had no appetite for, literally didn't eat anything for over a week, except maybe applesauce. No fever. If I did, it was a low-grade fever. Never lost my sense of taste, although I had no appetite, but I did lose my sense of smell. It affects everybody differently. My son had it, and he's only 24. He bounced back in a few days, maybe 4 or 5 days. And one of our daughters was tested negative. Lost a little bit of weight, which I could use to do. Not that I'm overweight, but could lose a few pounds. Anyway, so I'm back. I still have a little bit of a cough, so please indulge me. I want to thank Chuck Morse for filling in. He did my longtime friend Chuck Morse. And even though I had this cough, I was still able. It was not contagious. I was able to do a lot of Camp Constitution activity. We had a great time at the Crown of Maine Bloom Festival in late August. We had an information table there. We also had a parade. We were in a parade in here in Alton, New Hampshire, where I live now with my family. It's a nice little town. The Alton Home Day, Old Home Day, they had different groups, local groups and civic organizations, and the parade was about 2 miles long, and we passed out copies of the U.S. Constitution, so we had a really good time. And we've got a lot of stuff scheduled for the region in the next couple of months. And to find out more, you can visit our website, and there's a calendar there. And I do my best to keep it updated with activities, and with the calendar, it's some of it's not that detailed. And there are some events that we don't sponsor that I may not put up there. All depends on the organization. There's one group I'll be speaking to later on this week, but it's invitation only, and so I don't publicize that. Lots have happened since I last came on the show. Lots of nasty things, but we're not surprised. It's interesting when Biden was, in fact, when all of the, during the campaign, the presidential campaign, all of the Democrats were just to open borders. They were all advocating giving illegal aliens everything they wanted, free health care. It's not like they were lying to us. Biden, we know what Biden was going to do. He was going to undo everything the Trump administration did, no matter what it was, no matter how beneficial it was. He was going to reverse it because Trump did it, and that's not acceptable because Trump is not one of the establishment's boys. And it's so fascinating to see how many people completely buy into the establishment. All of these crazy rioters, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, they're being so played, but they're so full of hate they can't see it. But now we're looking at Afghanistan. Now the reason for us invading Afghanistan initially was because they were harboring Al-Qaeda and bin Laden. Pakistan did its dirty work too, but we didn't launch an invasion of Pakistan. So I would say that there was probably a legitimate reason for some military intervention in Afghanistan, because you had the government harboring terrorists. Now, they do that. I said Pakistan does it, Saudi Arabia. There's a lot of nations that are state sponsors of terrorism that we don't necessarily go after with full force and invade. But we decided to do it in Afghanistan. And once the threat is eliminated, we should have said, okay, time to go. But you see, you had George W. Bush, who was is and totally connected to the establishment. The Bush family is part and parcel of the establishment, just as much as the Henry Kissinger is, and as the Rockefellers are, the Rockefeller family. Bush is a total establishment, and they will do whatever the establishment wants. So Bush implemented, or of course his people implemented, this nation-building plan. You see, the goal of the nation builders, the New World Order people, was to take some people who are backward in their thinking, you know, didn't give women full rights, didn't think homosexuality was a good thing, like we do here in the West. We think homosexuality is great. Everybody should be a homosexual. It just should be promoted all the time. Rainbow flags and in the classroom, and every single male child should be a transgender, and every single female child should be a boy, etc. That's what we're promoting in the West. But Afghanis don't like that. They just don't want anything to do with it, you see. So 20 years. Now, Trump did have an exit plan, and it was a good exit plan from how I understand it. That they would have, first off, they would have taken out all of the civilians, the U.S. civilians, and all of those Afghanis that helped us to some extent, you know, translators and others, that the Afghani government would share power with the Taliban. And, of course, sharing power with terrorists is never a good idea, but the idea, hey, look, we can't be here forever. You guys got to work things out. And then get our military hardware out of there. All of the weapons and the aircraft and the tanks and all these other, what, $85 billion. If the government admits to $85 billion, you know it must be more than that, worth of military hardware. And then, you know, and then, of course, if they don't, if they do not adhere to the plan, then we take action against them. And that was what Trump did, or what wanted to do. And Biden went in there, and again, Biden, I don't think, had anything. He's not of sound mind. Now, if he were of sound mind, I'm sure he would have done the exact same thing that he did, though his handlers had him do. But they decided to abandon the airbase with all the weapons, with the prison full of terrorists, and stay in Kabul, the airport in Kabul, because it was close to the embassy. You see, the State Department officials, the deep staters, you know, the minor league deep staters, the major league deep staters, they didn't want to be inconvenienced. So, and then we see the debacle. We see these poor people attaching themselves to a jet plane, thinking that somehow they're going to be able to survive, falling off the plane. We see babies being tossed over fences because they figure they're better off. We don't know where they're going to go, but wherever that is better off than being in Afghanistan under the Taliban. That reminded me of Operation Keelhaul, another disgraceful chapter in our nation's history. When, and after World War II, there were a lot of refugees fleeing this Red Army, Lithuania, Estonia, Latvia, white Russians who were not Nazis, but they were anti-communists. Anyway, we don't know the exact number, but anywhere between 2 to 5 million, 2 to 4 million people were forcibly repatriated into the hands of Stalin. Most of those people were butchered, murdered. The women were raped. And that's what happens when, you know, evil people rule. And when you allow evil people to rule, this is what happens. They kill as many people as they can. And it was one interesting thing. I do remember a news story about, I don't know, 7 or 8 months ago where I guess it was in January, I think, when they were sending millions of dollars over to the University of Afghanistan to teach gender studies. You see, folks, you cannot take a people who have a totally different culture and turn them into metrosexuals and lesbians. You can't do it. You can do it here in this country after a few generations, and you've been very successful in doing it, but you can't do it in Afghanistan. They don't respect you. You know, I had a friend of mine who wanted to go into Afghanistan, a lady friend, a friend of my wife's that wanted to, she was in the military, and she thought she'd be a witness. She'd be a Christian witness over there. And I explained to her, first off, you're a female. You have no witness with Afghani men. So you have, and, you know, you, and the fact that you are over here, if you'd be over in Afghanistan, and they found out that you were married and had children, you have less of a witness, even with those Afghanis that aren't totally committed to the Muslim cause. So you have no witness over there. And a lot of Americans don't realize that. There is a certain amount of arrogance. You know, the book, The Ugly American. You know, we think we're going to change the world. The idea is what they want to do is they want to make the whole world into a carbon copy of them, you know, leftists, atheists, Marxists, or what have you. And it doesn't work. And what's sad is that I had a friend of mine that was in Iraq for a year. And the Iraqis, now this was back in, back in 2004, 2003, somewhere around there. He said he liked the people were good to him for the most part. They didn't understand why we had to invade, but it happened. But they have a perception of the United States is that most men are homosexuals, or most people in the United States are homosexuals, and that most of us kill our babies through abortion. And he said, no, it isn't quite that way. He said the homosexual population is like less, it's like 2 or 1% or something like that. And while we do have abortion, not everybody kills their babies, and there's lots of people in the United States that oppose abortion. But their perception is that we're all homosexuals and abortionists, because if they just watch American television, you know, get that and get the news, that's what they think. And it's kind of tragic that that's the perception that we have in the Muslim world, but that's the case. Now, with Afghanistan, I just over the weekend, my neighbor, I won't mention his name, but he was a soldier. He was actually a helicopter pilot in Afghanistan. And he worked with the Afghani army. So I asked him, you know, what his thoughts are. And he said some of them were very good soldiers. Now, we hear that they, you know, they surrendered as quickly as they could and abandoned their posts. And something like 66,000 of them died in the last 20 years. That's a high level for an army that's 300,000 strong. That's a good chunk of their military. But he said that in Afghanistan, they don't have the concept of nationhood that we do, that some of us do anyway, because some of us, United States, are open borders and UN and one world order, new world order. They're not interested in sovereignty. But he said in Afghanistan, it's tribalism. That's you know, just like maybe, you know, prior to the Civil War, you were loyal to your state. That was the first thing, and loyal to the country second. But that's the way it was. That's the way it is in Afghanistan, and we're not going to change that. And he said that any soldier at any time could simply abandon their post and go back to their tribe if, you know, the situation demanded that or remedied that. And he said there'd be no repercussions. You know, in our army, if you're in combat, I mean, if you desert in peacetime, you're going to go to jail for a long time. If you desert in wartime, well, that's a capital offense. They may not shoot people anymore, but that's a serious offense. In Afghanistan, it's just accepted. No one's going to say you're a traitor or a coward or you backed out. That's okay. Have a nice day. See you later. That's just the way it is. And again, a lot of us can't understand that. Even us patriots, conservatives, we said, gee, how can you think that way? Yeah, I can see having loyalty to the tribe. You know, but to actually abandon your post, you know, but that's just their culture, and that's the way it is, and it will always be that way. So, but the United States has a very long history of betrayal. Now, I want to say, before I say this, I want to say that I love this country. It's the greatest country in the world, and the people doing the betraying aren't the average American. We don't even know what's going on. But from World War II onward, and it would take hours just to go into the details, but, and again, most people don't know this. We ran an article on our blog by Dr. Peter Hammond, about this, and he just listed numerous, and Dr. Peter Hammond witnessed it in South Africa. But at the end of World War II, now the purpose of fighting the war was to stop Japanese and Japanese and Nazi aggression, taking over nations. The idea was to give these nations their rights back, you know, that you now have determined your own, you know, we get the Nazis out and it's up to you what kind of government you want, et cetera. That was the Atlantic Charter, you know, when Roosevelt and Churchill met in the North Atlantic. It was actually prior to Pearl Harbor, I think. Now, that was what was going to happen, you know, that we would respect sovereignty. We would not allow any other, like the Soviet Union, to dominate. Well, that didn't happen. At Yalta, Roosevelt pretty much gave Stalin anything he wanted. He got Eastern Europe, you know, half of Germany, or though not half, maybe not full half, but a chunk of Germany. He got Czechoslovakia. He neutralized Austria. He got Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, and country of Hungary, Romania, and many other nations under the communist heel. So, yeah, they liberated them from Nazi Germany, and they got one that was probably, if not as bad, even worse. Stalin was a mass murderer who made Hitler look like a... if you looked at Stalin as if he was a baseball player, he would be a major leaguer, Hall of Famer, and Hitler would have been maybe a triple A, you know, hoping to get into the majors when it comes to the number of people killed under their regimes. Mao was the worst in the 20th century. He was the Babe Ruth of mass murderers. But of course, the most Americans don't know this, and they don't want to accept it. They just focus on Hitler because he was supposed to be a right winger. But anyway, I'm digressing a little bit. So we abandoned our allies. Operation Keel Haul, as I mentioned a little earlier, where we promised these people that they would not be sent to the hands of the Soviets, but we lied to them. And again, when I say we, it's not your father or grandfather. It was the folks in charge, the State Department, the Marxists, the communists under Roosevelt that made this happen, and then Truman. The Korean War, that was another example. We would have won that with MacArthur in no time at all, but victory was never the purpose of that, and we're still over there. You know, South Korea and North Korea, and because of our treachery, of our refusal to win wars, of betraying General MacArthur after that incredible Incheon landing, the State Department got involved, and Truman fired MacArthur, and then he had a stalemate, and you have divided country, and you have a country of what, I think there's 15 or 20 million people in North Korea that have lived under the oppressive heel of communism, in some respects, thanks to our policy. And you had Vietnam. And again, there's a lot of, we should not have been involved in a lot of these, but in Vietnam, and this was mostly liberal Democrats that were propping up Diem. He was the George Washington of Vietnam. Back in the 50s, one of these treaties, you divided the country up. Communists had North, Vietnamese had the non-communists had the South, and our CIA got involved, and Diem, who was very corrupt, was assassinated, and then you had no unity in South Vietnam, and we had thousands of soldiers, thousands lost, 58,000 American men lost their lives, many of them were wounded. You know, scarred for life, some of them psychologically scarred when they came home. They were called baby killers. The same people who support abortion were calling our soldiers baby killers. And then we had a totally bug out by 1975, and communists took over and committed mass murder. And there were boat people fleeing that country. And now we have, you know, this communist country in Vietnam. And you look at South Africa. Now, there's an example of betraying an ally. Yes, South Africa had a minority white government. They practiced something called apartheid. We practiced something like that too. We had Jim Crow. South Africa was making a lot of progress. South Africa was the breadbasket of Africa, but we betrayed our ally, and they also fought with us in World War II. But we betrayed them into the hands of a communist, Nelson Mandela. And interesting about Nelson Mandela, he never hid his communist affiliation, unlike Fidel Castro. And by the way, that's another country we betrayed. Fidel Castro was, prior to Castro and his revolutionaries taking over, Batista was the leader. Now, Batista may have been corrupt. There's corruption all over the world. It's not unique to Cuba. Castro was actually arrested, put in jail by Batista. Batista could have had him executed. He let him go. And we promised Batista help. And the weapons that were coming were not allowed to go there. And in 1959, the communists took over our media, our fake news, which it wasn't called then. Painted Castro as the George Washington of Cuba. And the Bay of Pigs, where we promised to help them. There was counter-revolutionaries that were going to overthrow Castro. It could have happened. We promised them air support. The planes were actually in the air. Pilots were watching the landing of the free Cubans, and they were ordered back. I actually met a pilot that was part of this. They were ordered back. It was, and it was that was so that was we betrayed them. In Nicaragua, same thing. At Somoza, he was supposed to be this evil dictator, and we betrayed them into the hands of the communists. And Rhodesia, another example. And it wasn't just the United States; it was Western Europe and the Soviet Union going against this country again. There was even a smaller white government. You had tribes that were fighting each other, and the influence of the white Rhodesians, kept the peace. The same thing in South Africa. By the way, and a lot of people don't understand the tribalism that you see in other parts of the world. It's something that we really can't comprehend. You know, we hear about tribes, and we have Indian. In fact, in the United States, you had Indian tribes that fought each other, and in South Africa, if you're a member of the Xhosa tribe, and I heard an example of a nurse who was a Xhosa, and they might pull the plug on a member of another tribe who was in the hospital seeking treatment. I'm thinking that's just not think here. It's not thinkable. You know, you think of an Italian American nurse, a nurse who's an American of Italian extraction, and someone with Irish background comes in and needs medical treatment. Oh, I'm not going to treat you because you're not of our tribe. We just don't do that in this country, you know, anymore. Anyway, so we have a long history of betrayal. And so it didn't start with Biden and didn't start with Obama. Oh, I want to mention again my friend there that was a pilot, helicopter pilot. He said he made some interesting observations. He said that this was 12 and 13 when he was there. He and a lot of his fellow soldiers expected Obama to betray them, to basically cut off their supplies and leave them high and dry. So they actually had an exit strategy where they would stockpile fuel and weaponry. So in case they had to fight themselves out, it's amazing though. That's the situation we have. We have the executive branch in Congress today that's really an enemy of the American people and American soldiers. While you see them giving speeches and press conferences with U.S. flags behind them, they're doing their utmost to destroy this country. And there's absolutely no question in my mind what happened in Afghanistan was totally deliberate. That it wasn't stupidity, that leaving those weapons behind was the policy. And this guy, General Miley, Mark Miley, you know, the average American does not know the name of the head of the Joint Chief of Staff. Now, the average American might have trouble rattling off the Vice President and Speaker of the House. But unless you're in the military where you have to know the chain of command, or you're a real news junkie where you might know the name of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. But here's Miley. And Miley became known back last year when the communists were trying to burn down America, the Antifa and Black Lives Matter communists. And they had set fire to a church right across from the White House. And they were destroying statues and causing mayhem or what have you. And Trump was just trying to, I believe it was, hey, we're in charge here. The communists have not taken D.C. So he took a walk across, and by the way, he didn't order tear gas on the ground. So that did not happen. Anyway, he walked across into the church, and it was Miley behind him, and he was in his fatigues. And then a few days later, Miley is, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I apologize, grovel, et cetera. And then you see Miley testifying in front of the House Armed Services Committee back in January and February. And he's really talking about, oh, I want to know about white rage, and I'm white. He's supporting this critical race theory. And Miley's no idiot. Just look at his background. The guy is not someone who just, who has no idea what he's doing. He's got all the training in the world. He's you see all the medals he has. Now, some of them may have been politically appointed medals, but 101st Airborne, jumped out of planes. I mean, the guy probably has a lot of physical courage, but moral courage, he's totally lacking. He's a moral coward. Then he's running down the Constitution. He's, the Constitution accepted slavery, two-thirds. Five blacks are considered three people. Three-fifths compromise. Well, he lied. He either didn't know, he's just lying about it. And now he wants to be reappointed by Obama. I mean, I'm sorry, Biden. Well, maybe Obama is the one that's sort of the errand boy to Biden administration. But Miley is someone who is responsible in part to what's happening, the leaving weapons behind. He should be court-martialed. Lloyd Austin, who was a general, probably hates America as much as the Taliban. He also should be, well, he can't be court-martialed, but he can be dismissed from his position. Biden and the vice president should be impeached and removed from office. This will not happen. What's fascinating is that the worse things get, the more the left doubles down and basically comes out in approval of what happened. And what I think what may happen is that the left may turn on Biden and force his resignation. I don't see that happening, but they'll leave him high and dry to get Kamala Harris. And of course, there's no reason to replace Biden because he's doing the bidding of the establishment of the deep state, totally doing the bidding. And they have him. They know that they can easily take him down because of his dealings and the Ukraine and communist China and Moscow and his sons being sort of the conduit for all the millions of dollars that have been funneled into the Biden family, et cetera, et cetera. And Kamala Harris, she's just a total lightweight. She, she's a far leftist, and she knows exactly what she's doing, but she's just not the person. It was fascinating, too. The only reason why she was picked to be the vice president, because she was black, and she a woman. That was it. And that's really kind of despicable when you say that was what made her the candidate, not because she was qualified, not because she had the leadership skills or she had the command of the United States and she understood how things work. No, because she was black, or in this her case, half black, and a woman. Anyway, running out of time. I want to thank you for listening. You've listened to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shirtless. Until next week, may God richly bless you.
The kids are going back to school. Life is busy, and you don't have time to sit and wait for hours for an oil change. And you don't have to. Valvoline Instant Oil Change can get it done in 15 minutes with their drive-thru oil change. Completely touchless, and you never have to leave the comfort of your car. kind of like a little alone time with an oil change thrown in. Oh, and no appointment needed. Visit NewEnglandOilChange.com for 20% off your total purchase. And head to your local Valvoline Instant Oil Change.